one of my favorite things is the line from Futurama of like, you can't just have your characters say how they feel. That makes me angry. Like, so like trying to be like, okay, are they saying exactly how they feel? And if so, is that a problem?
Welcome back to Inspired Inc., the CWS podcast, a show where we promote indie comic creators and become inspired by what they create and their journey of creating it. I'm your host, Brandon Blocksdorf, and today on the show, we have creator Anna Peterson joining us, and we talk about how television writing and storyboarding relates to comics, what to consider when setting up crowdfunding rewards, and the importance of great lettering and design. All this and so much more on today's Inspired Inc. But congrats on your book, dude. Rifters looked like it did really well.
Yeah, it did. It hit the goal, went a little bit over. So that was definitely a breath of relief.
How long were you working on it for? Because I know we've spoken. I know you've been in the progress for it for a little while since I've known you.
The actual story, like I started working on like years and years ago. But putting it together in comic form, it's probably been like roughly a year that I've been doing the writing and the art and putting everything together for this one. Yeah.
So. Oh, nice, dude. Like what other, you know, when you work on your book and you're setting it up and it's all you, what's your process like? How do you tackle on like the journey of storytelling at that point?
I wish I had a very nice, curated list of like steps that I do, but I feel like it comes in these really like intense bursts of getting stuff done, very out of order. So I feel like it kind of, I'll have one week where I get, you know, I don't get a whole lot done, or I'll look back and be like, oh, I need to redo this section. And then the next week I'll fly through, you know, multiple pages. I'll get way farther than I did. So I feel like it kind of comes in energetic bursts a little bit more for me than like a really rigid schedule. But I think, it's sort of hard for me to say like, oh yeah, I do this and it takes this amount of time and whatever. But I think now that I've worked on it for so long consistently, it's gotten a little bit smoother in terms of kind of getting the process down and going a little bit faster. When I was doing it in the beginning, I was still kind of figuring things out. And I feel like once I was got more in the hang of it, coming from more of a like a storyboard background to comics, it was a little bit of a transition. So I feel like once I kind of got the hang of it, it started rolling a little bit smoother.
Oh, rad. Okay. So that totally makes sense too. You know, you're kind of just like filling out the story and trying to understand it. But like, it sounds like once you get the grip on your story, you're just like, oh, I get it. And I know where it's going and it needs to pour out. And those waves, are those like in sense of like, one day you're doing a bunch of just art and one day maybe you're doing a bunch of writing or coloring? And does it come like that? Like whatever kind of hits you at that moment is what you got to write out?
Yeah, I think so. I've tried to get out of the habit of like starting with line art and then all of a sudden seeing a page and being like, oh, I want to just go back and color this page. I'll finish the rest of the line art later. Like I'll try to at least get through a full step before moving on to the next step. Like I'll try to at least ink all of it before I start coloring it. And I'll try to, you know, I'll try to get through all of the coloring before I add any like lettering to it. Cause it used to be like, I would just be all jumping all over the place. And that was just kind of too chaotic. So I've at least gotten to the point where it's like, okay, I can do all of this step. I might not do the pages in order, but I can at least do all of these steps first before moving on to the second step. But yeah, I finished writing it a long time ago. So the writing wasn't too big of an issue, for this one. But yeah, the art was, just kind of taking some old ideas and just kind of making it flow in a way that was a lot more cohesive to comics, because it was kind of written a bit more like a traditional like television or, you know, miniseries. It was kind of originally written more in that format and they're not the same medium. So you have to kind of work at what works for comics that, you know, isn't available in a film or live action style. So it was just kind of learning how to take that and concentrate it and make it flow in a way that was going to keep the pacing correct while still being something that was a bit more I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, just something that fit more the medium of comics, since they're two very different mediums. So
I'd love that. What drew you from doing, like, you know, for one, like doing television film stuff into like transitioning to comics? Like, what was your like wavelength there to do that switchover?
Yeah. So I feel like when I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of exposure to comics because there wasn't really a comic or a bookstore where I lived anywhere nearby. We had the internet, but it was still kind of shitty dial-up. there wasn't really a lot of cool stuff to find at that time. So I was really more into film. But I realized as I was working on film projects, I didn't actually like the aspect of having to be on the set and all of the stuff that was involved in the production process as much. But I really, really liked the storyboard aspect of it. That was always my favorite part. And I had a fine art background in college. And I was just like, you know, this is the part that I actually feel like I enjoy and get more out of. So that kind of eventually sort of turned in that direction a little bit.
Oh, rad. That's super cool. Yeah. And, you know, storyboarding, it's such an interesting way of like pacing out a film or TV show. And I love seeing like how directors have, like, whenever they post the picture of like the stack of storyboards they've done. What kind of time does that take? Is that more like thumbnails to you instead of like what you have to do into comics? Like, where is that transitionary bridge that helps you out?
Yeah, I think one of the big things with going from storyboarding to going to comics is with storyboarding, it tends to break down the scenes a little bit more, whereas comics, they kind of, you try to combine as much into one panel without it being too busy or hard to follow or too much dialogue that's in one panel. It's because I feel like with storyboarding, it's going to cut from like shot A to shot B to shot A to wide shot. Like, there's going to be all of these things. And that does happen in comics. But one of the things I noticed when I was working on issue one is a lot of the story, like really loose storyboards I did a long time ago, I had to really look at like, okay, what's kind of too much for, in terms of how many pages do I want this to be if I keep cutting back and forth between all of these conversations. So learning how to have conversations in one panel with multiple word balloons, learning like how much can I put into this panel that gets the information across without like rushing through the story. So I think there was definitely a learning curve of like figuring out going from that to comics, definitely learning how to say the most in the least amount of time, essentially.
Oh, wow. That's super interesting. Yeah. Because I never really thought about storyboarding, how it's a new board after every like camera angle, you know, and every almost every movement, I guess. Right. Or is it more of just like that switch up per camera?
I mean, I think when it comes to animation, there's a lot more in between movements for storyboards, but I think for, you know, film and television, it goes pretty much between shots and like and transitions and stuff. So there's quite a bit that's going on there. Yeah, because they want to have as much info and planning out before you start, you know, shooting and paying actors a bunch of money, and you don't want to be doing extra stuff. So I think it's pretty planned out. Yeah.
Oh, rad. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, that transition to comics, totally different. I mean, time and pacing in itself, and where you want to keep people going slow and fast and controlling those movements. I could totally see how that, you know, even if you're just messing with the angles and everything, that pacing and how you bounce between those can be real slow, could be real fast. You're really controlling that flow a lot differently than in film. Do you feel like comics, like you're going to get more workout and more ideas out with this path, or how are you feeling after this book, you know, going through Kickstarter and that process and, you know, finishing it? Like, what's that like for you?
Yeah, it's a little weird to have actually put issue one together, because obviously there's still more to do at this point. But but yeah, having toyed with it for so long and actually finally having it ready to go out and have people purchase it is a little bit surreal, because it's always just been like my little baby that I've had for so long, and now it's like you're sending it out into the world, which is weird, but good. It's just weird. But yeah, I was very surprised with Kickstarter. I didn't really know what to expect. I've never done any Kickstarters before. And so we got it funded in the first 3 days, which was awesome. because I thought I was gonna really have to kind of scrape together and beg people to buy this. So I gave myself 3 weeks being like, I might really need that time. I don't know what to expect. And yeah, no, it funded a lot faster than I was expecting, which was awesome. But yeah, now I'm kind of looking at what I did for this one. And once I start getting a little bit more into issue two, I'll be trying to figure out what route I want to go in terms of crowdfunding next time. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such an interesting ride. Just try to get your book come to life through that, you know, fundamental mm-hmm. Kickstarter, especially being like, you know, your first one. It's hard to gauge things. It's hard to like really know, you know, the rewards behind it, you know, because it does seem very daunting for going on such an extended period of time. You're like, am I going to be grinding for like an entire month every single day trying to push out content, or am I going to get lucky and, you know, it's funded and you're just trying to fluff up stuff? What's like your goal and your like mindset when you're going into like setting up your funding goal, and, you know, especially because you are the, you know, main creator behind this, like what are you looking for on that?
I mean, I was pretty much just trying as hard as I could to hit that that final funding goal. I was trying to decide once I did hit that, because I wasn't expecting to hit it so fast, how, if I wanted to try doing stretch goals. The only thing is, it's just me. So I'm like, well, if I get a bunch of stretch goals added, I'm going to be the only one who can fulfill that. So, so for this one, I think, I didn't really push. Oh, you got a black cat there too.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. T'Challa is making his way into the show always. Yeah. Has to say hi.
Mine's sitting over on the bed, but, but yeah, no, I think, you know, going into the next project, I am kind of hoping to have a little bit more assistance this time. What I learned during the first one. So I'm sort of hoping that maybe next time I'll be able to A, get it out a bit faster, and B, have a bit of a help to try to maybe push doing a little bit more rewards if I end up going the Kickstarter route again.
Sick. Yeah, no, it's a complicated figuring out what exactly you could reward people with, especially because that costs money, that costs time, that's going to cost energy. Especially, you know, you're working with other team members, you're working with other people, part of your community, like that payout has to go out towards them and material. You know what I mean? There's so much to balance. And then your Kickstarter money is like, is it going towards me and the book, or is it just like funding everything else?
Yeah.
Also, you know, yeah. You know, so Rifters is like really, really interesting. And you're saying like, you know, this is of course issue one of it. When you're breaking up your story, what was your mindset, you know, breaking it up issue by issue, and how long are you expecting it to go on for? And like, what's the full, how did you kind of curate your story into like a few number of issues?
Yeah. So with, originally I'd written it more like a traditional, TV miniseries. So each character kind of got its own little separate episode, their own story. For this one, I'm thinking for John's first, for book one, it's probably going to be one of the longer ones, because it's kind of introducing everything, not just the character. You're kind of learning about the world. You're sort of picking up what's going on. Also, where he's living right now, there isn't a lot of dialogue, so that has to be kind of shown a little bit more through, you know, visually versus what they're talking about. So issue one is a bit longer than I think a lot of the other ones are going to be. But I'm assuming each one is probably going to be either two or three issues. I've kind of looked at how I want to block it out. But yeah, I think the first one is probably going to be the longest one. And then each one is going to be a little bit shorter than that one.
Yeah, it's always interesting, especially when you're going through comic book routes and storytelling, like arcs, you know, you know, act one, two, and three, and, you know, doing like what you're doing, like, you know, was it the A story and then B story and then like C story, and how like B becomes A and then C becomes B. And then, you know, it kind of goes through that little rotation of just acts and whatnot. That's like one of the funnest ways to kind of do it. And I know that's like a classic, you know, Chris Claremont did that with like his X-Men run and whatnot, just to keep it flowing and keep it going and keep it readers interested. And also it kind of helps with cliffhangers, I'm sure too, having that mindset with you. Cause television storytelling, I had some experience of it, you know, in college, but, it's way different than, you know, film or anything. I'm trying to think of some of the key aspects, but it really is just that plot storyline, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's, yeah, you have to, it, with miniseries or, you know, shorter stories for when you're watching them, you know, it is different because when you're watching a movie, you got to get everything in 90 to, you know, 200 minutes or however long the movie is. But with, you know, miniseries, it can be, it can essentially be as long as you want it to, but it also needs to keep you going the whole time. Mm-hmm. So it's, so you get a lot more time to work with, but you also, you know, have to make sure that each episode is kind of leaving you at a point that makes you want to keep reading. And with comics, it's like each page, you got to get to the end and you got to make sure it's at a point where they want to turn the page. So it's, yeah, you definitely got to kind of, try to get in that mindset when you're doing it of like making sure that each thing that's happening is making you want to find out more stuff.
And yeah, that's a fun page about page, a fun thing about page turners is you're keeping that upbeat and that consistency. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious. Like, I really want to just like sit down and analyze your books now, knowing all that and see how you like flow through with things. Cause I feel like people with the experience of like film and TV, they approach comics so differently than the average, you know, comic book reader that like dove into comics because they've always read comics. Like mm-hmm. there's a mindset and a storytelling mindset that goes with television and film that just, it doesn't really cross over to comics all the time. And I love seeing when it's like done mm-hmm. and like experienced and you guys are trying to like figure out how to implement into comics because sometimes it seems to work so much better and those books stand out so much more. Where did Rifters come from? Where did that like whole idea to be like, this was the story that I want to turn into a comic?
So I think it was, it's been a while. I think it kind of started around 2011 when I was just writing these like little mini stories with unrelated characters. I was kind of working a bad day job that I was just really, I felt like no creativity. It was not for me. So I was just kind of in my spare time, just sort of trying to make anything just to kind of feel like I had any sort of creative spark that I was going. And it's been so long that I didn't really have like an aha, this is what I want it to be moment that I can really remember. I just remember sort of like looking at this sort of scattered stories and drawings and little pieces here and there that I was playing with and being like, it would actually be really cool if these were one thing instead of separate things. So I kind of just ended up just kind of slowly piecing them together in a way that each character could kind of form their own little section of the story, I think.
Oh, rad. That's a really good approach too, because it sounds like you're very character driven. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's missing in a lot of indie comics where you have a great idea, you have a great plot or a great, you know, like, oh, this is going to be cool. It's a heavy concept mm-hmm. right here. But like, it's the characters that are going to drive us into that. And it's the characters that we're going to attach to and become fans of and chase after. And you know, that's a big lesson for a lot of people, like, and especially when they're wondering why their story is missing something, it's probably because they're not character driven enough and really diving into them. So when you're making your characters, like what approach do you take? I know a lot of people go straight for flaws. Some of them just go based off of a personality. But what kind of attracts you to shape your characters when you're making them?
Usually when I'll start, it'll just be like, I've read something or watched something or drawn something that just kind of, it drew me in, and it'll be something really simple. Like it could just be the way that the character is a little sarcastic or just like some aspect that I really like, and it'll be really simple and I'll start there, and then it'll just kind of slowly snowball over time. I don't know if I'd say that I always start at the same place, because the way that I picked the names for the characters was based off of the song John Jacob Jinglehammer Schmidt. It was like a running joke in the characters, and that was how I ended up picking their names. So I don't know if I'd say that I have like one specific way that I start, but usually it is a little bit more dialogue based, I think, mm-hmm. than anything. That's usually the thing that I like to write the most is dialogue. I know when I was first doing Rifters years ago, and I was kind of giving it to people to read and being like, what do you think? And they were like, we really love how they're talking to each other, what they're saying, but we feel like maybe you're focusing a little bit too much on the dialogue and you need to focus a little more on the plot because it's too much talking, it's not going anywhere. So you got to really like figure out how to make your dialogue really strong and really like to the point and feel like it's something that you would hear a person actually like come out of their mouth.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest approaches, especially with any writer. It doesn't matter where you are in your experience or what you're doing, especially when you're messing with like different accents and stuff like that. That's where it starts getting really complicated. But just learning like the nature of a conversation is just, sorry, my cat is just attacking my headphone cord. You have a black cat, you understand, I'm sure, the destruction and chaos. But yeah, like crafting conversations, and because it sounds so good in your head sometimes, and we all invent scenarios in our head that trail off and whatnot. And you kind of need to learn how to spit that out and make it like coherent for a reader. Like one of my favorite like practices to do, I'd love to know what you do too, but like I would journal and just journal like how I talk in my head to kind of figure out a voice, or I would sit around coffee shops and just sit and just like kind of like pretend I'm like writing, but I'm actually just listening to the conversation next to me and trying to keep up with that. Do you have like any like crafts, like, you know, ways you capture dialogue to enhance it?
I would say if I'm writing out something, I'll write it trying to get as much of what I want the audience to get out of it. And they're basically like saying exactly how they feel or what they think, which is not how it's going to end up in the end. And then going through and then just being like, how can I cut each sentence as much as possible to increase the subtext and decrease the length? Like what are they not saying when they say something? What are they unintentionally saying when they say something? What are they projecting in what they're saying versus what they feel? Like one of my favorite things is the line from Futurama of like, you can't just have your characters say how they feel. That makes me angry. Like, so like trying to be like, okay, are they saying exactly how they feel? And if so, is that a problem? How can they say something that might have foreshadowing? Like, how can I use dialogue to paint this picture as much as possible and not just say exactly what they're thinking or what they're feeling?
Yeah. Finding a way to like be ominous and like, you know, presenting something, but also being like very clear and precise and like getting the point across. So people are just like interested to bounce through the dialogue. Mm-hmm. I feel like my favorite when it comes down to stuff like that is like Tom King. And once I started analyzing how he kept stuff like short, but then when the explanation there, it's like presented well, and it's like kind of told throughout the story. And by the end of the story, you've kind of got the dialogue story and the caption story, which reveals a whole lot within the visual text as well. Like, it's really interesting on like analyzing on how some people do that and how you can kind of tell three stories within one, but it's all the same idea presented. And comics are the perfect way to do that, and probably the only way you could successfully do that to be coherent as well. And I guess it's different because you're a writer and artist, so it's like a lot easier for you to be like, what am I trying to think of and put on the page, or I'm trying to present that on the page and try to get that across to someone else to understand.
Yeah, it is interesting too with this story specifically, because there's two telepaths in it. So not only can they talk aloud, but you can also hear what a lot of people are thinking. So, which is both really fun, but also kind of challenging, because that can be a little bit difficult to portray everything that's going on without it getting kind of messy and difficult to follow. But yeah, no, it's been really fun having characters be able to read other characters' minds and also, you know, have conversations out loud. And, you know, sometimes forget that they can hear what the other person's thinking, but the other person can't hear what they're thinking. And they'll just be having a conversation with this person, not realizing they can't hear them. And just kind of like playing with a bunch of stuff like that is always really fun too.
Oh man. Yeah. I could only imagine that, because you're trying to like make it make sense to the reader too. Like, they are telepaths and they could just be having this conversation one way, but what's the best way to present this part of the conversation? Is it telepathic? Is it verbal? Is it through the visuals instead? Like, you've kind of opened up a fourth way of communicating aside from like the standard caption self talking at that point too. And so, like, you know, when you put your book together, how do you work on like the design and the format of it? Did you work with anyone else, or is this just like purely you just pouring everything out into it?
It's just me.
Gosh, that's so much. Yeah. What programs do you use for your design work, or is it like more Adobe based?
It's more Adobe based. I already had kind of the Adobe suite for when I was still playing around with like film and editing and stuff, and sort of playing around with some animation ideas. So since I already had it and I already knew how to use it pretty well, it was just kind of the easiest to transition over to doing all my stuff in.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. Do you feel like any of this could turn into like little animation shorts? Is that something you'd like to aspire into for some of these stars?
Yeah, I mean, it would be super cool to see it, especially with, I feel like there's been more and more animation that's more like adult based, both in anime and more Western stuff. And it's so cool to see that for an older audience. And when I did it as a mini series, I was like, oh man, this would be so cool as an animation. I wish that we could do it as an animation and that originally, but yeah, I think it would be really cool to see it animated. But you know, that's, I gotta finish one project at a time. So.
Yeah. That's breathing room as like a self creator, especially one like you, like you're just handling it all and you're like mm-hmm. coming up with it and you're, you know, programming with it. Like that's a lot of work. You know, drawing the book itself is a lot of work, and then drawing, inking, coloring, producing, and all, like you said at the beginning, the, you know, it's just you behind all this, so you're trying to make it as simple as possible. Do you think that would be a better way to open the world of Rifters more than just like kind of retelling portions of it?
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. I have seen a few online comics that, you know, it's usually like certain web comics where it's almost entirely just done as a traditional comic. And then there'll be like a little section you get to that actually is animated, and that's kind of cool. But yeah, I think, as of right now, that's not on my radar unless I, get quite a larger budget to have somebody help me. Cause I don't think I want to do that on my own. That sounds like way too much. But no, I mean, when I was originally kind of working on turning it into a comic, I did make a little, a very short animated thing. It didn't turn out very well because it's kind of my first time really trying to get that to work. But yeah, it was cool to be able to see them move. That's always fun.
Yeah. Does that help you like kind of visualize some of the like way the characters would act or kind of move through things, to even make a drawing a bit simpler at that point too with action?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think when I plan out my story, or I'm trying to construct a scene or a panel in my head, I think, you know, because I mostly do it in my own house, I tend to kind of like move around and talk out loud and sort of pace back and forth like I'm crazy trying to like get a feel for the movement anyway. So that definitely helps. But it is nice to be able to kind of see that movement and get that weight and like feel what that looks like. Yeah.
That's awesome. And I mean, bringing another way and style and like craft into comics to like make mm-hmm. it clearer for you. That's really exciting. I think that's what makes your books like look a bit more unique as well. Like your art style is very unique, and like the way you're trying to like panel things out with the experience you have and translating it into a comic book form, that's mm-hmm. going to take on an entire different approach to your book. And I don't think, you know, a lot of artists that I've, you know, especially talked to and interviewed have gone down and have a similar mindset and path. So mm-hmm. I feel like seeing this grow over the next few issues, how long do you want to keep Rifters at? Is it like a 3-6 type of range? Or
I think each character, I'm thinking like either 2 to 3 issues, depending on how fast it goes. I have everything written out, but I think some of it can be condensed just a little bit. So I'm thinking probably 2 issues at least per character, just to kind of keep it from getting too long and taking forever. But I'm thinking probably John's might be 3. Possibly, just because it's a lot more story in the beginning, but probably looking at like 2 each, I think.
Nice. That's super fun. And it seems reasonable to tell that story and then like move on to another project. Is that something that you're also looking forward to too? Is like once Rifters is art is done, you get to take on an entire new beast?
Yeah, I've got some other stories that have been kind of sitting on the back burner for a long time. I've played with, you know, like making little scenes from them, but I've never really tried to write everything out just because I've been putting so much time into this. But yeah, no, I definitely have a couple other story ideas for the future once this has kind of come to its finale. But I've been avoiding sort of sketching and doodling it out because I don't want to be abandoning one project while I'm still, you know, working on it. So,
yeah, keeping that balance is probably the most difficult part. I'm working on like 3 to 4 different series at once right now because opportunities opened up and presented themselves. So I'm like, I can't say no to this. Yeah. You just jump onto it. And then you realize like how far behind you fall behind every single story once you take on another one. And it starts to be like, I'm just always behind. And I guess that's okay, but it's happening at that point, you know?
Yeah. No, I definitely did do some, you know, anthologies, some, you know, short, like, 3 to 5 page stuff, which it helps you not get like sick of working on the same thing for so long. Mm-hmm. It is nice to kind of take a little bit of a break and do that. But yeah, I just feel like it's really hard for me to take on extra projects outside of this one, for the most part, unless it's something that it's like, I just absolutely can't say no to this, or this is a really good paying job and I just can't turn it down. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it's kind of push some of the extra stuff over to the side for now.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I love that focus though. And I think that's a great way to be like, I'm going to guarantee this story is going to be told and it's going to be completed. Cause just mm-hmm. completing your story sometimes is the most difficult thing you could do in the world. But it seems so much more feasible. Like, especially, I know film and television gets real tedious aligning with schedules and with people. And, you know, when somebody drops, you got to fill that gap and all those type of things, and keeping it consistent throughout that, you know, entire shooting process, where, you know, comics, you're running the show. It's up to you, and it's up to you how it's going to be shaped and formed and curated. That seems like it's going to have a lot more promise with just coming to life at that point. I would love to do film and television stuff at some point, but it's just the timing and the investment and the outcome that doesn't seem as, like, I guess, rewarding at the end of it. It seems rougher in a sense.
I think it's not that it's not rewarding. It's just that there's so many people and so many elements that you need to have to make even something very simple. And it's just, if you know, film is your thing and that's the thing that you want to see as your final product and you're going to give it your all, then that's awesome. But I felt like when I was doing it, like, I was just getting more out of the other aspect than the actual, like, filmmaking. And I liked editing a lot, but I felt like, you know, I kind of preferred being able to be in this, like, controlled, quiet, contemplative environment rather than the chaos that was always trying to get everything to work on a set.
Yeah, the biggest part of any craft is like loving the process and every step of the process. Mm-hmm. Once you start falling out of love with that, it's just going to become a really big struggle to like take the next step and finish it, which is our ultimate goal. So as long as you're in love with the process, that's what's going to lead you to success overall, I feel, with no matter what mm-hmm. craft you end up choosing, what medium and what not to. Man, that's so cool. And so, like, with Rifters and you designing it, where did you get like the skill set for like lettering, and how did you dive into those aspects?
So with lettering, I had done a little bit of lettering for my like anthology submissions, but I was fairly new to it before I started doing my own stuff. But I took on kind of like a mentorship for a year, and in that time period, I ended up doing lettering for a Comixology series, which is going to be coming out through Dark Horse sometime in the near future. But I ended up doing lettering for that. And yeah, that was definitely, because it wasn't any of my artwork, I was just doing the lettering on it. It kind of really made me focus on like, okay, how is this lettering going to, you know, not get in the way of the art, but still feel integrated well? How is it going to make the story move on the page that you want? Because basically the bubbles are going to be making the audience look where you want them to go. How is it going to make the scene feel? And how is it going to be at the same time not the focus of what people are kind of looking at when they're looking at the artwork? So yeah. It's kind of this silent thing that it's like, if you do it well, nobody should really notice that there is lettering, but if you do it badly, they'll definitely notice right away that it's not working.
Yeah, it's a make it or break it thing with the book. And I think a lot of like untrained eyes like see it, but they're not sure what is wrong with the page. And I feel like those of us who have read and like kind of analyzed a whole lot of comics and art, that's what we're going to go to almost immediately. Like the lettering, how is this working? Because we know the story will kind of take place as we read it. We know the art can be, you know, it's up to like the person reading it at that point, how they're deciding how the art is. But like the lettering, what's guiding you through the story, that's really the main vessel you want to keep focused on, because that's clarity. That's what's going to, you know, tell you everything that's happening. So if that's cluttered, and say even if the art's cluttered a little bit, you know, one of them can kind of save the other.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know if bad art can, I mean, good art or bad art could save bad lettering. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the lettering is almost so vital. That's what's going to shape or break your story because of the clarity aspect behind it.
Yeah, I know. Like when I was learning more about film, that they would tell us like, you know, the visual aspect is 20% and the audio is 80. If you have mediocre video and great audio, people are a little more forgiving. But if you have amazing video and terrible audio, everybody will think it looks and sounds bad. So I think it's kind of the same way with lettering. If, you know, if your artwork can be amazing, but if the lettering is just jarring and I think bad lettering almost looks worse when it's next to good art. Cause you're like, what is this doing here? This art is good. Why is this happening? So yeah, I think definitely, while lettering is not the most glamorous endeavor of the whole project, it's very, very vital to it coming out well.
And do you do digital or like traditional lettering? How do you go about that?
Generally digital. I've done a few traditional, but I kind of just prefer, even if I do traditional, I'll usually plan it out digitally just so I feel like I've got a knacker for like what I'm looking at when I actually hand draw it. But honestly, I think these days I prefer just to be able to do digital. It's just a lot easier.
I can see that for sure. What programs are you working on with that? Is that again Adobe that you're using Illustrator and everything for it?
Yeah, I mostly do it in Illustrator.
Nice. That's super cool. Yeah, that's something I need to get like more experience with overall with comics, is just like lettering and getting those word balloons down and having fun with the word balloons, you know, and like putting some like effort and like color and just like texture to them. I think that's one of the coolest things when it comes down to lettering. I'm such a big Sandman fan that when Todd Klein was doing all those extraordinary things, it was just like, man, that is like where I want to be and have fun. And that's what's the most, you know, again, most eye-catching part. And it really brings these characters to life with their voices on top of it all. And that's what really brings out good lettering too.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Super cool, dude. And like, I want to ask you before we start wrapping up, like with your character designs, what's your approach with that? Because I feel like character designs themselves are one of the hardest things to approach with the new series and trying to get that idea down and on hand. What was like, again, are you pulling from like film and television for inspiration from there? But how do you go about like with outfits and the actual look you're, you know, landing on to match the tone of the series?
Yeah. So when I first kind of started designing it, I kept the outfits fairly clean and simple, because originally when I was doing this as either a live action or animation, I was like, okay, I want to either have something that's fairly simple, that's not that difficult to put together. Or if I'm animating this, I want it to be a little bit cleaner, so it's not as hard to put those out, like put all those details in those outfits. And then as I eventually decided, you know, I wanted to go the comic route with it, I did keep the fits a bit more simple. I added a little bit more embellishments, a little bit more detail, and you can have more with the shading going on. But I think with the characters, like features and hair and expression, I made them a bit more leaning toward the realism side, because I now had that a little bit more freedom to be able to put a bit more detail in there and make their expressions a bit more subtle. So I think once I kind of settled on like, okay, I definitely want it to be in comic form, I did keep some of the earlier aspects I had. But basically, I tended to like doing the characters to have a little bit more realistic anatomy and build and everything. So that just sort of ended up being a route that I sort of veered off towards eventually.
That's so much fun. Yeah, I love, like, that's the thing with character designs. Like, again, you know, you're pulling from different things, and it's how are you going to translate that into like a memorable person and someone that stands out and someone you could draw consistently without, you know, messing with the flow of a story, and it can match everything. Like, that's something that I think is something overlooked when it comes to designing comics. Like, where does that fashion come from? Where does like the idea for those things go through? And that's, I don't know, it's just really fun thinking about that, because now that like I'm learning more about fashion and like pulling from that itself, it's like, okay, I see how much fun this can really be. But it's like, it's like coloring kind of. There's so many options to go with. How do I narrow it down to like three or four to really make it concise and memorable? Is your coloring that kind of similar to that? Like finding your palette and like landing on, you know, what it's going to use for that story?
Yeah, I would say usually the color palettes in my story, they tend to be a bit more muted with just like a little bit of, I would say just like kind of almost a pop of a certain tone or color. And then they change, the color palette changes a little bit because each story kind of flips back and forth between where the characters are set in the present and then where they were kind of in the beginning of their individual stories and how they sort of got involved. And so the coloring changes a little bit between the present and the past, to give, you know, a visual narrative that this is, you know, a flashback essentially, but also to just kind of make it feel a little bit more like you're looking at a memory. Like they tend to be a little bit, I don't want to say watercolory, but like a little bit fuzzier in a lot of the colors for the, when they're looking back versus when they're in the present time. So just kind of, and the, all of the panels, when you look back, at the flashbacks, all of the panels are done with this really like scratchy sort of, style, almost like a charcoal style border instead of a straight line. So I would try to look at, you know, how can I make it look a little bit more like what I would picture a memory to look like rather than just like looking at it straight.
Oh, that's so much fun. I can't wait to go back and like really analyze your books now. Like, I'm so excited to just like look at all this because it sounds like you have so many things to just bring to the table as a creator, not only from your storytelling aspect, but from like your designs and going from like storyboarding into translating that into comics and the beats that you're going to choose. I feel like your books are going to be very good to just like analyze and go through and just like kind of like get a feel for different mediums and how they could become comics. Really cool. Anna, thank you so much. This has been like a super fun and educational conversation we had today. Why don't you tell us like where we could find you and what we could look forward to seeing you do in 2024?
Yeah, for sure. So you can find me on Instagram. My name's right there. You can find me on Lesser Known Comics. I'll have an actual link to my work once the Kickstarter is finished up. Once the books are available for in print and digital, you'll be able to find me on there as well. I've got, obviously, this issue is going to be coming out soon. And then more info about issue two as it arises will be coming out. But yeah, if you check it out, I know the Kickstarter is kind of wrapping up, but you can definitely find me on Lesser Known Comics as soon as it's up there.
Rad. Super cool. Any cons or tabling you might be doing this year too?
I'm doing a little bit in, I'm from Minneapolis and I'm doing some mini conventions here. I've applied to a few on both coasts. I haven't heard back on some of them, but hoping to do at least a couple out of state this year, depending on what my finances look like for airfare and whatnot. But if I do have any updates on any cons I'm going out of state, I'll definitely be posting on my Instagram for sure.
Rad. Yeah, we'll keep updated there. And I'm so proud of everything that you've been doing, and I can't wait to see more of your work. It's going to be really exciting. And congrats on your Kickstarter. I mean, I'm so hyped to hear about it and see how well it did towards the end as well. It's always a fun time seeing books get funded and successfully made. And like once it's in your hands, it's just the raddest thing in the world. But dude, thank you so much for your time and for talking today. I really appreciate it. And everything, that all the insight you gave us, very valuable. Really, really appreciate it. And for all of our watchers and listeners, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, let us know what you want to see in here. We have so many new updates coming out with Inspired Inc. and CWS. You guys are going to have a blast. And we're going to have a live drawing show very soon too. So we're working on that. Keep an eye out for that, for updates and everything. And Anna, we are going to get you on that too at some point. That'd be super fun to see how you do some of this stuff. For everyone else, thank you so much. Stay, what's my log out headline thing that I do? Stay creative. Thanks for hanging. Stay creative and stay inspired. Looking for high quality printing, fast turnaround, and the industry's best customer service? Look no further than Comics Wellspring. Trusted by thousands of indie comic creators, Comics Wellspring is proven to be the go-to comic book printer. So when you're ready to bring your comic books to life, go to comicswellspring.com and be sure to check out one of the best platforms to sell your physical and digital comics online, the CWS Bookstore. Remember to subscribe, hit that notification bell to see our lives come out twice every single week on YouTube and podcast platforms. And also tag us when you share your favorite episodes and moments from the show. And remember, creators, thanks for hanging, keep creating, and stay inspired.